see your own perfect reflection in this world in a moment of pure truth and lucidity. And you own that. You own the now. You stop being a victim. You step out of victimhood. And you recognize that at the oversoul level, you steered your plasma into this vector of time-space. You are the pilot, and you are the navigator. And there is a reason why you determined that at the soul level. And when you recognize that, and that you are not a victim of circumstance, and you weren't, you know, windswept here on the solar winds and somehow accidentally incarnated in your mother's womb, for God's sake, just own it. Own the now. The geometry of now is always perfect, and never more perfect than when you see your own reflection for the first time and you say, wow. Greetings. I steered myself into this vector. Now I'm going to enjoy the journey. From this point on, I am no longer a victim. It's not being done to me. There is no them and us. There is only images out there on the holograph of life that I conjure into manifestation in direct proportion to how I have negated those aspects within myself. So that's the language of life, the real language of the holographic field of expression is that whatever happens to you in the now is divinely anointed and appointed by you in conjunction with your divine flame. And the moment you own that piece, you can start to determine a different outcome. And that ultimately is what the alchemy is about saying, okay, I'm no longer going to be subjected to false light. I'm not going to be idolizing or worshiping Netflix or Jesus Christ or Mohammed. I'm not going to idolize anything extraneous now. I'm going to step into the I am, to the Adam, to my own divine nature. I'm going to absolve myself, redeem myself for all transgressions. I'm going to love myself up, and then I'm going to walk boldly into life, and I'm going to paint on this canvas, and I'm going to only stand under universal law. I will never cause willful harm, loss, or injury to another living soul. That is it. And if we all engage that Adamic privilege, we manifest and create the patterns of perfection in this world. And overnight, we redeem the air, the soil, the water, all the elementals. Every aspect of creation moves into phase coherence with that divine flame. That's my message to the world. It's the same message I give myself on a moment-by-moment basis.
All right, Sasha Stone, human rights activist. Exposing the agenda. Spend play.
Yes, very, very beautifully put.
Thanks, Gary.
of it, but has this made it hard for you to tell your story, or at least hard for the story to be accepted? Because people like to categorize, and if they can't fit it in a box, sometimes it seems a little difficult for them to digest.
Yeah, that's the problem I always face with this show. But seriously, though, we're about to hear from Chris Bledsoe.
I can tell you where I was just talking about this week with some friends. 14 years ago, right at 14 years ago when this all happened, 07, the whole UFO world was all about nuts and bolts, meaning it was an alien with a ray gun riding an X-29 star cruiser from planet Zeta from the galaxy or whatever, and you know what I'm saying. They just have every kind of name, every kind of outfit, ray gun, shoes, had him outfitted and all. I mean, who knows this kind of stuff, right? I'm still scratching my head. How do they know this? Well, imagine me saying I was out at the end of my rope asking whoever's up there for help, and all of a sudden these three big balls of fire come out of the sky, take me away for four and a half hours, and when I come back, I'm not sick anymore. So that whole experience, even though it was terribly frightening, I still had this sense of peace about me, knowing that something magical happened. And everybody else had a terrible night that night, and I was more afraid for my friends and my son, but it changed me then. And so here I come telling about angels and UFOs, and boy, I got ostracized real quick from the UFO world and being involved in the church most of my life. I got the same thing from the church. Oh, you're playing with Satan himself. The Nephilim, this made-up word. Can't even find it in the Bible, but yet they appear to have every type of thing they can find about it. I mean, created about it. But long story short, I found myself in a place that was alone from the UFO world and from my home and where I was raised, my community. And I never would change. I knew what happened. I kept seeing it. They kept coming. They kept telling me, you have to tell what you know. There's a great deception coming. And for me inside, it was joyful. But to tell it was hard. And that people would make fun of you. And the very people I sought for help, the UFO world, was probably one of the roughest ones on me. But I never quit. I never looked back. And every time I got the chance on Facebook or elsewhere in a chat room, I'd always say good versus evil. Spiritual. Good versus evil. So in over 14 years.
Good versus evil. Now y'all better believe this is a spiritual war. And if folks are just waiting for it to end, or they got a rude awakening coming in store.
I can tell you pretty much I've had a lot to do with changing this whole community into seeing the spiritual or consciousness, they want to use that word, side of it. And so it's been a journey, and we're seeing much progress. I feel a lot of gratitude for that.
Thank you.
of the many experiences that you've had, the one I would like to highlight is with a entity who you call the Lady. On this particular night that you got something, I guess let's call it the gift. It might be one of the strangest things I've ever heard, and for people who maybe haven't heard you break down your stories, I think this one is peak high strangeness, but can you recount this for the people who haven't heard it?
Yeah, I can. And it kind of plays into what we were just talking about. So the first 5 years of getting brutalized by everywhere I went, from the UFO world to my very family even and surroundings, I just kind of was in depression. I didn't want to talk about it anymore publicly. I refused to go on any interviews. I mean, it was over. I'm done talking about this. Just to save my family and, you know, get back some normalcy in my life. But I couldn't get away because it kept appearing. They're showing up and showing up. So I had this great compelling, really what was happening was after 08, I began to remember a lot of everything that they shared with me. And I knew this would happen based on Dr. O'Connell from Harvard working with me on regressions and all. So I began to remember, and my wife and kids would actually record me sleeping, talking in my sleep, yelling out. And I just began to have this greatest compulsion. I had to tell the story, but I didn't want to. So in April, the night before Easter Sunday, Saturday night, I was dead asleep at 3 a.m, and I heard this deep voice just say arise in a real deep. I mean, it was so loud, it woke me up out of a dead sleep and actually frightened me because I looked about in the room to see who was in there, and I asked, I heard that, who's in here? And I don't know what happened at that point, Greg. I just know that I found myself outside, fully dressed, from sleeping, you know, in my underclothes to fully dressed with tennis shoes on, following these three shadowy entities out into the forest, out to the same area where the dog kennel is, where Chris Jr. and I had that experience. So a lot of things happened in that area. It's hard to explain how, when you're near this, or when they, how they get you in this sort of like trance, but they do. To where you just, I'm not afraid, I was just there, and this being reaches out and hands me this object and said, this is yours, you must keep. And when I reached out and I grabbed it to hold it, had my hands out, and then when he placed it in my hands, it was the shape of a pack of sausage about that size, like a 2.5 pound thing of sausage, say 1 foot long and 3 inches around, but it was furry, it was gray, and it felt warm and like a critter. I thought it handed me something like a critter, but it felt prickly to my hands, so I kind of freaked out and just dropped it on the ground. And this voice said, no, you must keep this. You cannot lose this. You must keep. This is yours. You must keep. So when I reached down to pick it up, I look up, they're gone. Nowhere to be seen. And here I am standing out near the kennel with this strange object that I'm afraid of in the dark. And I'm trying to figure out what just happened. I mean, why am I fully dressed, standing in the forest with this thing in my hand? And so I leaned over and opened up the end kennel and stuck this object in this kennel, thinking, I've got to find what's going on. I'm not going to lose it. You know, I just felt like I could have it safe in this kennel. It wouldn't get away. And I could think, no longer than I put this thing in there, this blast of wind. And we're talking 3 a.m. in the dark, and I could still see the trees behind the kennel and out to the side. Well, this blackness just appears. This tree disappears in front of me, like a hole opens up, and out comes, which for a second I thought it was just coming out of the forest, this bull, very big cow, running at me and ran straight over top of me. Well, I noticed it was translucent as it went over, but it knocked me clear to my back. I fell flat on my back on the ground in the leaves, and I rolled over to my stomach to run or to figure out where this thing had went.
We don't stop with this. I heard it back and I said, hey man, shit, I got to do a bunch of more shit on this because this shit's a little dope.
And my neighbor had a dairy farm. I grew up next to one and helped work on it. And no stranger to cows. Of course, there's no cows nowhere around. And to the minute I rolled over and pushed myself up to get up, all within seconds of being hit, flat on my back, rolling over, getting up all in one stride to my knees, is when here in front of me is no cow no more. It's a beautiful, glowing woman.
Like in the days of Jimmy Noon, when the people did not feel such a sense of impending doom. But that ain't really got to be the way. That's just for the people to listen to what the media says. Oh, oh. They ain't hip to the real melody. Judgment Day. You're gonna say that this world can completely change to your dictates if you're righteous and pure. Who's gonna determine that? Why you king? Oh, and the cosmic wisdom being and the truth and righteousness stream and the council of birds and everything you ever said and everything you ever heard.
No.
Translucent golden hair. She has this white gown on. It goes from her feet to her neck and out to her fingertips, barefooted and floating about 3 feet off the ground. I'm on my knees now and my chin is up about her toes. She's probably 6 feet away and she's looking down on me, glowing, I mean, just beautiful. Sparkles within her dress, just glowing. She said, "You know why I'm here?" And I knew immediately why she was there. This urge I'd had to tell what I've known, keep telling the story, even though I'd committed to myself I'd never tell it again. She said, "This is your burden. You must keep." Words she said, "You know why I'm here. This is your burden you must keep." And I knew what it was to tell it. And I struggled internally too, because these beings, they're so strange looking, frightening actually. And I grew up believing angels were these women or these beings with shiny dresses and wings and a crown, or babies with wings. You know, it's not like that. Once I met Dr. Pasulka and the biblical, I researched all I can. I still do about it. There were always creatures, and there were terrifying events when they happened to the biblical people. So, you know, here I am. I don't know. That would probably be the greatest thing. When she told me, she said, "You must tell this story." So what's incredible, Greg, is I didn't know it, unbeknownst, but Dr. Pasulka at that time had gotten interested in this subject. And I was very much her first subject, you might say. She was trying to get a meeting with me. She wanted to hear me speak. So she was working with MUFON behind the scene to have them arrange for me to go speak. Well, I would have never gone to speak, because a week later, MUFON calls me and says, "Can you go speak in another week?" So 2 weeks later, I was at a meeting in Asheville, North Carolina, talking about the lady. I'd just seen her, and I didn't want to tell about the river event. I wanted to tell about what just happened, so... Just so turns out Dr. Pasulka was there. And that created an 8-year relationship where we study about this, and we have a lot of friends together that are into this and very important people. I introduced her to Tyler.
Right.
She talks about in her book. and others. It's amazing where the road has taken us.
The development of technologies that were basically seeded from the stars, from gifts we've gotten from the clouds, I guess I should say.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Are you saying that the development of artificial intelligence is a thread that was started because some kind of recovered metals or recovered gifts from these clouds led people down that path of developing AI?
Absolutely, where it came from, where all our technology comes from. It's from them. They give it to us. We're like in a terrarium. This is what the Guardians told me. They call themselves the Guardian. And they told me, we are what you would call the angels from the Bible. I told this to MUFON. I told it on the first, this was a meeting when they came and got me. And they said, this planet is like a terrarium. We manage all the life here and we tend to it. And it gave me this tremendous sense of nature, something to do with nature. It took me a long time to figure it out. But I immediately went to the forest and camped for weeks at a time after that event. But when they told me that, we're the guardians, and they had these triangles on their, what you would call a uniform, I guess. Underneath the glow, there was a triangle emblem. And that triangle led me to a lot of important things I can't talk about. But let's just say I have one of those I wear on my lapel that was gifted to me. A triangle is similar to the pyramids of Egypt, right?
Yes.
So the universal creation of universal creators of life. That was what Tyler suggested, who that might be. That triangle has a very big meaning to a lot of people. It got a lot of attention, let's just say, when I reported this part. And supposedly a part of that metal that was discovered, that was gifted to us, these things don't crash. had that same triangle stamped in the myth.
Right on. Yes, the triangle is something I planned to ask you about. I guess there isn't a lot more you can say, but it seems to be pretty impressive. Are there any other artifacts or gifts that have been recovered that didn't originate here on the Earth that you can talk about?
Well, I just say that I knew about them a long time ago. I knew about them before Diana did. And I introduced her to the people that kind of wants her to tell that story, if you understand what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with the metals and tested with them and to get reactions from this stuff, and it's just too much to talk about. But Diana is really the one that can tell that story. But yeah, there are metals that were supposedly gifted to us. They don't crash. That's not true. From what I'm told, they don't crash. They were given to us to help us evolve our technology.
Hmm. Well, you mentioned the development of AI, and that is a curious thing because, of course, tools are just tools that can be used for good reasons or bad, but a lot of people are very concerned about AI. We have these algorithms on the internet that are emotionally manipulative, plugged into social media that keeps people addicted. It rewires the brains of young people. And a lot of folks out there are really worried about this technocracy taking over, this overlay of surveillance everywhere. And there's not a lot of good PR for AI technologies right now and the things that are coming out of Silicon Valley. And does that concern you at all when you're weighing the positive persuasion of these entities that they seem to be good, but they're seeding technologies that people are quite concerned about, that are fundamentally changing what the human experience is, and they're typically used for control and somewhat manipulation of people?
Oh, you better believe it, Greg Carwood. Now the real technology, the real cosmic interface is in the music. You are listening to me, the host of the show, Tony E. on banjo, and Nicola Roya Artuso, I think, on a six-string banjo, if my memory does serve. And violin, if you hear some, it was because of him. Thank you.
Yeah, it's not used for the good. It can be a weapon. Back when I first started messing with this stuff, I told them I wouldn't contribute anything that had anything to do with weaponizing this stuff, only for the benefit of health, you know, medical and sciences. And so that's the area we worked on, is researching the medical side. But I can very easily tell you that they can easily weaponize some of that technology. Mm-hmm. Scary stuff, right? They can do if they wanted to.
Have done it.
Yes.
They
yes.
are doing and it.
Let me ask you a little more about the context you've made since your story came out. The people in the invisible college, as they call it, people from the deep corporate world, the CIA even, and military intelligence. You have formed some pretty strong bonds with these people, and I've heard you say that obviously technologies are being developed not only from these gifts, but based off information from your contact experiences. Can you elaborate on that at all, and some of these relationships, or maybe not the identity of the people, but the organizations that you've been involved with that have shown an interest in your experiences?
Well, they're just like a big family of people that... Let's just say they're scientists. There are scientists that work for this country. Most all technology is owned by the government anyhow. That should be a clear understanding. Any technology basically is owned by our country. And so, yeah, they have a big interest in it and have for a long time. We just didn't know about it, but... The first scientists to come around were probably NASA, and they became friends and still have very good friends at NASA. Some of the most famous scientists in the world there are friends of mine, and very good friends.
Me too.
Friends in the CIA, several, the Air Force, and they're all just people very much interested in learning. Because I've asked them all, why do you come to me? Why am I important to you? Why do you want to come to my house and see these lights in the sky? And they'll all tell me the same thing, because we want to see them too. We know they like you. They don't like us. We'd like to learn from it. And so that's the approach that they've all come on. And over the years, I've learned to understand they don't have near as much as what people think they have. And they want to learn. I mean, it would be crazy if they didn't, right? And so, yeah, I have a lot of friends in Navy, Navy intelligence, all of them. The NSA, National Intelligence. You know, John Alexander, he's in the Los Alamos National Laboratory's non-lethal weapons expert. It's just a lot of people interested. And they have the same questions we all do. What is it? You know, why does it keep coming? Like Jim Simivan, he's a friend of mine. He commented on that video I sent you. I think you got the same one this week. He said it was one of the best or videos he'd ever seen, period.
Yeah, it is impressive. And I wanted to revisit this triangle because, as you mentioned, there was an entity where it seemed to have a light in its chest with this dark triangle, and then this inner circle of scientists seemed to have an artifact that also has this triangle stamped on it. In previous interviews, I've heard you say that you were told this came from 50 million light years away from beings who can get here in 2 hours. Is that right?
That's what I was told.
Okay, I'm curious how this information could be known. These beings wouldn't be familiar with what an hour is. The speed of light doesn't seem to be a constant. So I'm curious if members of this research group have gone back to this planet 50 million light years away and realized it took 2 hours. Because it seems like hard information to know without going there.
I know, right? I scratched my head at that when they first told me that 12 years ago or so. I scratched my head and said, huh? Yeah, I can't say a whole lot about that, but they know. At least the person that was telling me this would know what he's talking about. And I trust him.
I understand that. I wonder if there's just a deeper relationship with these beings than us commoners would realize.
Well, they know they're up there. We all know it because they can see it. Anybody with ground-based cameras at NASA or any of these people that watch the sky on radar, they see all these anomalies all the time. They just don't know what it is for the most part. It's not like you can drive up there and say, stop, and let me ask you a few questions, right? It just don't work that way. And they're so highly technical. It's like the tic-tac thing with the military. Everybody's all into that, and that was one of the greatest things they ever did was tell that story, because that's the truth. It's like Disclosure.
Got nobody. Really nobody cares for me. I'm so sad and lonely. Won't somebody take a chance?
But what they're seeing mostly is on radar. Seeing it in a screen, but not visible, physically visible. Sometimes they are. I've heard that they had visible sightings off the ships. But a lot of it was on radar.
Right on. So if these beings are angels, or if they're some kind of stewards of our reality, some kind of managers of our physical reality, isn't it weird that they would have a home planet?
I don't know that they have a planet. I think they live in the atmosphere. I think that they're all the time. And the reason I say that is from all the photos I have.
I sing your love song all the time. That is a lonely bee. Yeah, pal. No.
Reading Diana's information on the clouds, the biblical clouds, and there's a lot of information on that. And the story of Moses in the Exodus, where he talks about for 38 years when they left Egypt, for 38 years, a cloud, a pillar-shaped cloud. What's a pillar? It's like a column or a cigar or a pole. But a pillar-shaped cloud for 38 years went before these people and hovered over top of them and gave them shade in the day and was on fire, glowing at night to give them warmth and light and fed them what they called manna or food from heaven every day for 38 years. It's all over the Bible. They called them clouds. King James, 500 years ago, when he retranslated the Bible, he intentionally left that word real meaning out and made it look like a weather phenomenon. Mistranslated. And we know this for sure.
Easy as. Don't do it like this. Easy as what? Fold up kind of multi-layer tray.
Multi-layer tray, man. Multi-layer tray.
In a world of rat and a world of VHS. You can call this a sound test, but I know it's gonna be good.
3-4-3-4-99. I won't say those rhymes, cause they're so asinine.
On a finger by the system, I'd rather die. Talk about some slanderous lies. In a system that I so much do despise.
Black. when I do be annoying.
But when I start going on to the plasma fields, what can we back the times for the greatest?
Space plane!